Welcome to Business Frontiers in Malta, the program exploring the dynamic world of enterprise, innovation, and economic transformation. This series shines a light on startups and entrepreneurship, powerful forces reshaping how we live, work, and do business in Malta and beyond. From bold ideas to disruptive technologies, entrepreneurs are challenging the status quo and driving global change. We will explore what fuels their journey, how they scale, and the obstacles they face in today's competitive markets. Whether you are a founder, policymaker, investor, or just curious about the frontier of modern business, this series is for you. I am your host, Professor Anne-Marie Take, from the Department of Policy, Politics and Governance, and we are broadcasting from the university's radio station, Campus 103.7. On today's program, we will be talking with our special guest, Professor Leonie Baldacchino, diving into the topic, the enterprise edge, unlocking ideas, strategies, and insights that give your business the competitive edge it needs. So stay tuned because you won't want to miss a moment. Professor Leonie Baldacchino holds a PhD in entrepreneurship from Warwick Business School, an MA in creativity and innovation, and a BSc honours from the University of Malta. She is Associate Professor at the Edward de Bono Institute for Creative Thinking and Innovation at the University of Malta, where she held the post of Director between 2013 and 2022. She is also Programme Chair of the Entrepreneurship Special Interest Group at the European Academy of Management, Associate Editor at Emerald's Journey of Enterprising Communities, Editorial Board Member at Wiley Strategic Change, and Fellow of the International Society for the Study of Creativity and Innovation. Welcome, Leonie.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey into the world of entrepreneurship?
That's a good question, because actually my journey into this world happened, so to speak, by serendipity, if you like. It's not something that I had planned a priori when I was younger. It's not something that I used to say, you know, I want to grow up and become an academic or an entrepreneurship researcher. And I suppose I got here by following my heart, by, you know, really studying and working on things that I truly believe in, that I'm interested in, and I think that matter really and truly. So my academic journey started with an undergraduate in psychology, as you have just mentioned. After finishing that, I felt the urge to study some more, and that is something that I still do, obviously. And I had discovered back then it was the still new Master in Creativity and Innovation at the Edward de Bono Institute. I was actually one of the institute's first students. And that is where I discovered entrepreneurship, because as part of the master's, I did a dissertation on the role of creativity and innovation in entrepreneurship. And kind of back then, I was still thinking about, you know, what am I doing here and why am I doing it? Because I never really wanted to become a psychologist. And also in terms of entrepreneurship, I wasn't really quite sure how I had gone from psychology to innovation and enterprise. But my interest in research and studying was still there. So I started looking into possibilities for a PhD. And I discovered the area of psychology of entrepreneurship. And that is when kind of the penny dropped, you know, because I found out that there's this huge area of study that combines my undergrad and my master's. And it was quite fascinating, and I'm still quite fascinated by it today.
Is it still, do you think, at the time, still very novel, still very new in Malta?
At the time, back then?
Yes
for sure. In fact, I did my PhD overseas because at the time there wasn't really anyone who could supervise me specifically on the psychology of entrepreneurship. I had gone to the UK. Nowadays, as an institute, we are offering PhD programs. And obviously, over the years, I've diversified, so I don't only do psychology of entrepreneurship, but I do entrepreneurship more broadly as well. But I suppose my heart is still very much in the psychology and the cognition side of things.
If I had to ask you, psychology in entrepreneurship, what does it really mean in layman's terms?
All right. It's all about how entrepreneurs process information, how they make sense of things, how they identify opportunities, how they come up with ideas, how they cope with stress. I've done some work very recently, just published, on well-being, what are the coping strategies that lead to better well-being outcomes, as well as certain personality traits. So, that sort of thing.
Were there any role models or maybe mentors who maybe have influenced your path?
Well, yes, I suppose I have been very fortunate that there were many people, still are many people, in both my personal and my professional life, who offer me guidance and advice, and who I look up to. So one of the key people who steered me in the direction of entrepreneurship was the then director of the Institute, Professor Sandra Dingley, who I still look up to as a mentor till this very day. She, I guess, had the wisdom and the foresight to know that back then there wasn't really anyone who was studying the psychology of entrepreneurship. And she encouraged me that this seems to be a growing area. And well, here I am.
Okay. It's fascinating in a way how, you know, experiences shape, you know, our entrepreneurial outlook. Let's look into what makes entrepreneurs succeed today. So let's start with, how would you define entrepreneurship in today's world?
Okay, so I suppose traditionally, the traditional definition of entrepreneurship is starting up and running a business. So there are activities involved in business management, obviously in the actual setting up of the company and so on. But I look at entrepreneurship from a much broader lens because I think there is a lot more to entrepreneurship than that. In fact, I speak to my students about the entrepreneurial mindset, about how it is possible to be like an entrepreneur, even if you are not really starting up and running your own company. Because I see entrepreneurship as a way of seeing the world, a way of looking at the world, a perception, seeing opportunities where others only see problems, having a creative outlook, therefore coming up with solutions to those problems, and then most importantly, I suppose, taking action in order to create value. And value can be created in a variety of ways. So it's not only about creating financial value, as perhaps entrepreneurship was seen in the past. But entrepreneurs, I always try to inspire my students by telling them that entrepreneurs can and do change the world for the better. So they can have social impact, they can have positive environmental impact. And I suppose that kind of offsets the negative impression that some people have of businesses and business entrepreneurs who might not have historically behaved in the best manners possible.
Okay, Leonie, you've said a lot of things, so we're going to unpack them one by one. You started off with saying an entrepreneurial mindset. To our listeners who are listening in on this program, what does it really mean?
Okay, so if we look at the traditional definition of entrepreneurship, of starting up and running a business, there are certain skills involved, okay, including, as I said before, seeing opportunities whereas others only see problems, having the courage to take action, the creativity to identify solutions, to tolerate risk and ambiguity. And the mindset is all about trying to develop the attitudes and the perception to behave like an entrepreneur, even if one is not already in that context. So if one is in employment, for example, nowadays more than in the past, and I strongly believe that in the future even more than now, employers value the entrepreneurial mindset in their employees because they don't want employees to simply turn up to work from 9 to 5 or whatever and sit around waiting for instructions. They want employees who are able to take the initiative to solve problems, right? So I think in a nutshell, that is more or less what it means. And as I always say also, it's important not only for starting up and running a business, but for one's professional and personal development as well.
Okay. You also made reference to an entrepreneur having a social impact. Mm-hmm. What does this mean?
Okay. So we talk about social innovation and social entrepreneurship as forms of innovation and enterprise that solve social problems, social issues. And the broader term would be sustainable entrepreneurship. So sustainable entrepreneurship would be tackling the three P's, we say. So the profit aspect, okay, because there is still an economic activity and revenue generation. The social aspect would be creating, as I said, social impact in terms of people. And the third P is planet, or the natural environment. So a sustainable enterprise would be one that is contributing positively to those P's. A social enterprise on its own would normally be contributing mainly to a community-based or to a social people-based person, whereas the environmental impact would then lead to green entrepreneurship or environmental entrepreneurship.
Okay, you made reference to people. And you were talking about, you know, impact and how this affects communities. Would you say that corporate social responsibility fits into this?
Yes, it is a form of, yes, a form of social impact. The difference is that with CSR, there is an established organization usually that is operating mainly along the profit-making route, but wanting to give something back. So there would be a CSR program in place to, I don't know, plant trees or clean up the seabed or donate a certain amount of, a certain percentage of profits to a good cause. Whereas with social entrepreneurship, social innovation, sustainable entrepreneurship, the social impact side would be the main focus rather than, you know, just a small percentage of trying to give back, trying to do good.
Okay. Also, in this discussion, you made reference to environmental impact. What does this really mean in practice?
Well, in practice, a green entrepreneur or an environmental entrepreneur would be one that is specifically aiming at solving an environmental problem. So it could be something like waste management, for example. It could be clean energy. It could be reduction of food waste. Right, so those would be specific problems that the entrepreneur would wish to solve through setting up a company.
There are a number of companies that use a lot of boxes and drinks, you know, and people obviously consume this food and then they throw it away. Is it possible that there isn't any solution to some of this to reduce the waste that you're talking about?
Of course, there are many solutions. In fact, there is a growing trend of what they call the zero waste shops, where you go to the shop with your own containers and you just buy the product filled into your own containers. That completely reduces, obviously, the waste of packages.
Okay.
That is one simple solution. There are, of course, many others.
So, in your view, what would you say are the key traits that make someone a successful entrepreneur?
Okay, so when we talk about traits, normally the reference is to personality traits, right? So personality is understood as a relatively stable individual characteristic that one is born with, so to speak, and that is relatively unchanged throughout life. In the past, there was a lot of research on the personality traits of entrepreneurs, so trying to understand what traits predispose individuals to become entrepreneurs in the first place, and then once they are entrepreneurs, which traits are likely to enhance chances of success. And that obviously led to a huge body of research, and many, many traits were identified as being very important in entrepreneurship. So there was, for example, a lot of work on the so-called big five, or the ocean traits, which are openness, conscientiousness, extraversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. And early research indicated that entrepreneurs tend to be high on the first four and low on the last one, on neuroticism.
What are the first four again, please?
Openness, so being open to ideas, open to experiences. So, you know, one can easily associate that with entrepreneurship. Conscientiousness, so having being responsible and attention to detail. And again, you know, one can understand why that can be an important trait in entrepreneurship. Extraversion, being outgoing. Again, and many entrepreneurs have to speak about their products, have to network and whatever. The fourth is agreeableness, so somebody who is well-liked. And the last is neuroticism. So somebody who is neurotic would be paranoid, experiencing negative emotions. So according to a lot of research, entrepreneurs tend to be high on the first four, but low on the last one, on neuroticism. In addition to that, many other traits were identified, such as curiosity, persistence, resilience, tolerance for risk, and the list goes on and on and on. However, what started to become quite evident in the research was that, first of all, there is no single entrepreneur who possesses all of these traits, right? Secondly, there were studies that opposed each other. So one study would find one thing and another study would find another. And the third problem was that a lot of these traits were actually not specific to entrepreneurs, but they were also found in other people, in other leaders, in athletes, for example, in politicians, whatever. So then researchers starting to ask the question, okay, we're not really getting anywhere by studying the traits of entrepreneurs. So the shift then started to take place by looking more at the cognitions of entrepreneurs, how they process information, how they make sense of things, how they cope with stress. And these are how they identify opportunities, how they come up with ideas, the creative thinking. And I tend to prefer this approach because it is less deterministic. So it's not like you say, you know, I'm either introverted or extroverted, and that's how I'm going to be because that's how I was born. So there's nothing I can do about it. With cognition, it can be developed. It can be trained. You know, these are all qualities and skills. If we talk about coping strategies, for example, we can learn how to cope in different ways. You know, so there's research that indicates very clearly that certain coping strategies are more effective than others. Therefore, we can train entrepreneurs and train ourselves to adopt certain strategies as opposed to others.
Very interesting, with all these skills that you mentioned and certain areas that, you know, an entrepreneur maybe should have. And you mentioned the idea of this processing of information. And would you say that is only particular to entrepreneurs?
No, of course not. Cognition in general is something that we all do as human beings. We all process information. In entrepreneurship, of course, we refer to entrepreneurial cognition, which is information processing by entrepreneurs in relation to entrepreneurship contexts. So an area of research that I have been involved in quite extensively is the identification of opportunities or ideation, business ideation. And that involves a process of noticing, of being alert, of, as I said before, perceiving what others would see only as a problem, but actually seeing it as an opportunity. Creativity is a cognition as well. Creative thinking is a cognition.
Okay. So I find that, you know, these are very interesting skills, but I also realize that sometimes entrepreneurs can't stop there. They need to market themselves. So would you say that marketing plays a very important part in an entrepreneurial organization?
Well, yes, of course. I mean, that is then the communication aspect. If there's no marketing, if there's no communication, you know, the public, the customer segments that you are trying to attract aren't going to become aware of your existence, let alone are they going to take an interest in your product and purchase your product. So definitely, yes, of course, marketing is indispensable for startups and entrepreneurs in general.
Okay. We've had a number of entrepreneurs on my show here in Business Frontiers in Malta, and they have come and explained what their idea was, what their product is, and of course they realized the importance of marketing. One of the comments that I made was, you know, to be able to find these entrepreneurs, I found this very difficult in a way. You know, in Malta, if I know, you know, certain people, then, you know, they'll give you names and, you know, you try and reach out. Does this worry you in terms of, you know, when we're trying to teach entrepreneurship, how do you access these companies or these organizations?
How do I personally access them?
If you had to?
Well, I'm, again, you know, quite lucky because I've been in the sector for many, many years now. I've been working in the entrepreneurship scene. I've been, for example, coordinating Global Entrepreneurship Week activities in Malta since 2009. This is an initiative that takes place all over the world in about 170 or 180 different countries. And we as an institute coordinate the events here in Malta. the first couple of years, I also had difficulty reaching out to entrepreneurs as speakers and as participants because I wasn't involved in the ecosystem, in the network yet. But then after a while, you know, I started to get to know people, they started to get to know me. So it has now become much, much easier to recruit, so to speak, participants for that sort of event. And also for my studies, for research, thankfully.
Of course. So you mentioned the ecosystem. I understand there is such a thing as Silicon Valletta.
Yes.
Are you familiar with this? Can you explain this for our listeners?
Silicon Valletta is, as far as I know, a network that is run by an entrepreneur, by Simon, and they get together. It creates a community a network is very important in entrepreneurship. And it's not the only one. For example, what I am more familiar with is the Foundation for the Promotion of Entrepreneurial Initiatives, FPEI. They have the Future Founders Plus Club. The reason is because I'm on the FPEI board, so I know a lot more about it than I do about other initiatives. And the aim of this Future Founders is to bring together aspiring entrepreneurs with more experienced people from different industries, and they organize monthly events focused on specific topics.
Okay. And when you said, you know, this foundation itself, when was it set up?
It was set up a few years ago. I'm not sure exactly about the date. I think it was around 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What are the activities? When you said they organize a number of activities, what would these be about?
Different topics that are relevant for entrepreneurs. So
there are talks?
Yes, there are talks and networking. There's always a talk or a panel discussion followed by networking and some refreshments, generally.
So it's good to know that, you know, entrepreneurs out there know that there's a door that they can knock on and meet other people who are obviously like-minded and part of the ecosystem.
Yes.
Okay, how important would you say is creativity and innovation in launching and sustaining a business?
How long do I have to answer that? Can we spend the whole show? No, joking apart. I mean, it's absolutely indispensable. I think it would first be good to explain the difference between creativity and innovation, because many people think that they are the same thing, you know, they are buzzwords ultimately, but there seem to be some misconceptions. Some people think that creativity is only about the arts and that innovation is only about science and technology, which is absolutely not the case. We define creativity as the generation of ideas that are new, so original, but also relevant, so useful, appropriate, effective for the task at hand. So the creativity is the conceptual stage. Innovation is the implementation of those creative ideas to create value. So the difference is that one is about the concept, the idea, whereas innovation is about putting it into practice, right? And it's not about being different just for the sake of being different. It's being different from and better than what is already available in the context of business, of course, out there in the market. So innovation is about finding better ways of doing things, introducing better products, introducing better services. So how important is that to start up and sustain a business? As I said, it's crucial, because to start up a business, ideally, you would be solving a problem in a way with a better solution, with a more innovative solution. So in order to start up, there needs to be the creative input. But then you can't stop at creativity. You can't stop at the concept. The idea has to actually be implemented, and for the business to survive and to remain competitive, then there needs to be a steady input, a steady flow of creative ideas and innovation.
There have been a number of companies that have mushroomed. We talk about fintech, for example, where you have the finance and the technology. And we've had a number of people here who they themselves entrepreneurs and have gone into this area. How do you see that as a creative idea and an innovative one when you mentioned, you know, creativity and innovation?
Fintech as a sector, you mean?
As a sector.
Well, it's innovative, I would say. The origins of the sector was the combination of the financial services and the technology. Because sometimes, you know, we get questions, we get asked, okay, but how does one come up with a completely new idea? It doesn't have to be completely new. Sometimes it's about the combination of existing ideas, existing concepts, in this case, existing sectors, no?
Yes, yes, okay.
In a new way.
Of course.
To create value.
I think fintech also mushroomed or originated really is because although we have banks and we have a number of financial institutions, it seems like entrepreneurs identify this niche and realize that they can actually carry out these services where the banks didn't have the time or possibly, you know, the human resources to be able to offer this to clients. Mm. And it seems like, you know, fintech has really taken off, and there are quite a number of companies who have been entrepreneurial and are offering these services in Malta today.
Yeah. And in fact, if I may add to that, large established organizations, like in this case banks, have a huge advantage in terms of the resources at hand, you know, but they do leave gaps in the market for smaller companies, for startups to be able to exploit. Because smaller companies don't only suffer from the liability of smallness, new companies don't only suffer from the liability of newness. The fact that they are small and new makes them more agile. It makes them more flexible. It enables them to weave through the gaps that are left by the larger, more established organizations that to them, you know, it's just not worth investing in order to exploit a smaller gap. But really and truly, the smaller gap is what a smaller company would need to get their foot in the door and to become established themselves.
Yes, yes. And they are also being supported, where you have a number of entities, Chamber of Commerce, Malta Enterprise, you know, who are supporting this type of business because obviously they contribute, of course, to the landscape, you know, to the business landscape in Malta as well. Talking about Malta, so do you see any differences between Maltese entrepreneurs and those maybe in other European markets?
Well, I wouldn't really say that the difference is the entrepreneurs themselves. I think entrepreneurs in Malta are as entrepreneurial, as creative, as capable as entrepreneurs elsewhere. The difference, I think, is the context that they operate in. So the fact that entrepreneurs in Malta are, you know, on a small island, essentially, that has a natural geographic barrier, that is the sea, which makes traveling lengthier, very often slower, sometimes more expensive. That also applies to importation and exportation of goods, products, and also resources, materials. We don't have natural resources as an island besides the sun and the sea, which are great for for tourism, you know, but other sectors need to import and export. We have a limited domestic market, so scalability is a problem. Locally, if one wants to scale, one needs to look at internationalization. And we also have a very competitive domestic market. Many entrepreneurs complain about the copycat syndrome, so to speak. Yes. You know, an entrepreneur launches an idea, it's a success, and then very quickly there are many copycats. So it's also important for entrepreneurs to think about first mover advantage, but then also how to protect that first mover advantage.
Leonie, I think now it's time to take a short musical break. Please stay tuned to Campus 103.7 to continue listening to the discussion, The Enterprise Edge, unlocking ideas, strategies and insights that give your business the competitive edge it needs. Before we go, the following song,
Ramble On by Led Zeppelin,
was selected. Leonie, why did you choose it?
Well, because I think it really captures the idea of a journey. Like entrepreneurship is a journey, it's all about learning, experimenting, experiencing. Ramble On also captures that sort of message. And also, Led Zeppelin are my favorite band.
Much obliged for such a pleasant stay, but now it's time for me to go. The autumn moonlight.
Back to Business Frontiers in Malta with me, Anne-Marie Take. Now let us get into the second part of the discussion. With me, I have Professor Leonie Baldacchino, and we are discussing the enterprise edge, unlocking ideas, strategies, and insights that give your business the competitive edge it needs. Every entrepreneurial journey has its challenges, so let's explore what looks like in practice. Leonie, what would you say are the biggest challenges facing entrepreneurs in Malta today?
I think I've already covered many of the challenges that are specific to the local context before the break. So rather than what are the challenges, I think it's also good to mention what are the opportunities. What does Malta's small island state context present that is good for entrepreneurship? So, for example, one of the things that many entrepreneurs comment on is the fact that the limited domestic market, the small domestic market, makes it a great test bed, mm-hmm. right? So actually being able to test and pivot ideas for products and services locally. And if they are well received here, then they can be perhaps adapted depending on context and internationalized. So that is one thing that many entrepreneurs praise about Malta.
What you mean is that like Malta is like a laboratory?
In a way. Yes, it can be seen that way. Another opportunity is the fact that we are very closely knit. And again, that could be seen as a challenge, especially in terms of fear of failure, experimentation, and that sort of thing, because one might feel that if they share ideas, either the idea could be stolen or if there is a business failure, you know, it becomes known very, very quickly, and therefore there could be reputational issues. But on the other hand, it's really good to be able to network with people who could provide resources to the company, to the startup. And the fact that we are small makes that much easier, much more feasible to do.
I understand that on an annual basis, there are startup fairs that mm-hmm. take place in Malta. Are you in some way involved in these?
I generally participate either as a speaker or I run workshops. So yes, and there has been a huge growth actually in the startup ecosystem locally. So since I started many years ago, there was always some grants and some funds for entrepreneurs. But what entrepreneurs have at their disposal nowadays is huge compared to what there was in the past, in terms of grants and funds, but also in terms of support programs, incubators. You mentioned the startup festival that takes place in October, I believe, every year by Malta Enterprise. You know, these are all opportunities that make entrepreneurship more a part of the culture than it ever was before.
Yes.
So when I had started many years ago, you know, we used to speak about the need for a culture change. We don't really speak about that anymore because we feel that the culture has changed. It has become much more open to entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship. I remember before we used to try to speak to, we used to do work with teachers in schools to try to get them to instill the entrepreneurial mindset at primary and secondary school. And the reaction used to be, what? No, but we have, our job is to teach students to do well in their exams and then to get a job. And our response was, well, you still need to teach students, you know, how to do well, but to think creatively, to think critically, and to offer another alternative, to offer the alternative that perhaps they don't need to get a job, but they can create a job for themselves and for others. So, you know, it was always this kind of, but now we in many cases, let's put it this way, when we say something like that, we are pleasantly surprised that we are preaching to the converted. Of course, I'm not going to take credit for this because there has been a lot of work by other entities like JA Malta, for example. They do a lot of great stuff in schools with students. But as I said, you know, I think slowly, slowly the culture has changed and we see a lot more support for entrepreneurs.
What you're saying is maybe not just the culture, but also the rhetoric has changed.
Yes.
People don't talk
yes.
about the importance of creativity, but now it is happening. And
yes.
so how can you improve? Okay. However, here, yeah, you know, many aspiring entrepreneurs also face or may fear failure. How can they overcome such a fear?
Well, I think fear of failure is a very, very common and perfectly natural feeling, really and truly, and not amongst entrepreneurs only, but among people in general. I don't think anybody, you know, given the prospect of failing, would be like, oh, I'm really excited, I'm going to fail. I mean, generally, people try to avoid failure, which is understandable. For entrepreneurs, one of the ways in which one can overcome the fear of failure is to reframe it not as the end, but as a stepping stone, as part of the learning process. Innovation and entrepreneurship are all about experimentation. They're all about trying new things. Therefore, there is an inherent risk of failure. So if one sees it as through that lens, then hopefully one would fear it less. Then there are also some practical strategies that would make failure less painful. One of which could be, for example, only investing what you can afford to lose, known as the affordable loss principle. In the testing phase, until you have certain, until you have built confidence through feasibility analysis and so forth, that you have a good opportunity to pursue, don't invest more than you can afford to lose. Because the more you invest, then, you know, if things don't go well, the harder it is to get back on your feet. Another strategy might be don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? Try to hedge your bets, so to speak. But I think that mindset is extremely important. Now, obviously, here when we talk about failure, we're not talking about failure that takes place through carelessness, through laziness, through not doing what you need to do. It's a failure that would happen because things didn't play out according to plan. And then it's also very important to be able to adapt, to pivot, we say in entrepreneurship.
Okay. Sometimes it's very difficult because there are some areas or some factors that are in your control, but then there are others that are externalities. So, for example, recently, as we know, there are always wars all over the world, and this in some way can have a direct or indirect impact on your business.
That's a very good point. And we speak about the locus of control in entrepreneurship, maybe linking back to the question about traits. I could have mentioned this, but I forgot. But this is a good opportunity to mention it. The locus of control is the extent to which that people feel in control of a situation. Entrepreneurs tend to have a high internal locus of control. So they feel that they do have control over what happens. People with an external locus of control believe or feel that everything is up to destiny or up to chance or whatever it is that they believe in. Now, as you rightly said, there are many things that are truly not within our control, but what always remains within our control is how we react to them. So someone with an external locus of control would react to a negative experience or a war or a disaster or whatever with a very fatalistic reaction. Oh, I'm so unlucky, this always happens to me. See, I tried to start up a business and COVID happened. Or someone with an internal locus of control say, well, okay, now this happens. What do I do in order to overcome it? How do I, you know, control the repercussions, the consequences?
So it's like damage control.
Yeah. Okay. And coping strategies, and like coping I mentioned before.
Okay. Resilience and adaptability are often cited as essential. How would you say these traits manifest in successful entrepreneurs you've worked with?
Well, I think the way they are reflected is in the way that that entrepreneurs bounce back from setbacks. All entrepreneurs have setbacks. You know, there is no such thing as a smooth, straight road from startup to success, because there are always difficulties. But the way that entrepreneurs bounce back by showing adaptability, by showing flexibility, by showing that they don't give up when things don't work out the first time. Rather than giving up, they actually take control. They understand why things didn't work out. They use their creative thinking skills in order to come up with solutions to the problems, and they adapt and pivot the business models as required.
If I had to ask you, looking at the Maltese market, which emerging industries present the most exciting opportunities right now?
Okay, so I think as a Maltese economy, we already have very strong industries like the financial services. Tourism, of course, has been the backbone of the Maltese economy for many years. iGaming has recently, in past years, grown a lot. But there are also then emerging opportunities in the intersection of technology and sustainability. For example, earlier in our discussion today, we spoke about sustainability.
Yes.
And this is important also because the customer is nowadays much more aware of the importance of sustainable products and sustainability. So the possibility to merge technology and sustainability through, for example, clean technologies, I think that is quite an interesting opportunity for expansion.
Okay, let's move on now maybe to education. So education and mentorship play a critical role in shaping these journeys. So let's hear your thoughts. How can universities better prepare students for entrepreneurial success?
Okay, well, first of all, I am obviously completely in agreement that universities have an important role to play. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing what I do, right? Universities are usually seen as a place of theory and knowledge generation, right? Research. In the context of entrepreneurship, I think it's important to blend that knowledge creation and research with an element of practical application and practical experience. So we can prepare students by developing the entrepreneurial mindset through understanding what researchers find about entrepreneurship and then enabling them to put that into practice. And that's exactly what we do at the Edward de Bono Institute. in our Masters in Creativity and Innovation, for example, we teach the theoretical underpinnings, certainly, but then we invite students to actually come up with a business idea, to carry out a feasibility analysis of that business idea, you know, so really and truly simulating the steps that would be involved if they would like to start up a business. So
I understand what you're saying. Would you say mentorship then would be important in developing these entrepreneurial skills that you are talking about?
I think mentors are very important in entrepreneurship, not only for skill development. They are obviously, you know, because mentors are, that's what mentors normally are expected to do, to help with skills. But considering that entrepreneurship can sometimes be a very lonely journey, you know, there are certain stages in the process where entrepreneurs feel, you know, that they're doing this alone, that especially when the challenges start to surface. So a mentor can really help there by offering moral support. You know, I know what it's like. I've been there. I've been through it. You know, keep at it. And also a mentor being experienced and involved, but not too involved with the business, can provide an objective outlook when the entrepreneur could become too wrapped up, right? So many entrepreneurs tend to experience cognitive biases, their blind spots, you know, because they're so passionate about the business, they're so into it, they're so focused on their goal that they fail to see the bigger picture. A very problematic cognitive bias is the escalation of commitment or sunk costs. And again, this is something that everybody experiences. Take somebody who's bought a second-hand vehicle, a second-hand car, for example. They've spent quite a lot of money on it. And then after a few weeks, problems start to crop up. Oh, I've just bought it. I spent so much on it. Let me pay a couple of hundred to fix this. And then the next month, something else goes and you spend some more. You know, that is the escalation of commitment, feeling that you've invested too much to quit. That is very common in entrepreneurship because entrepreneurs very often feel that, you know, they've invested so much time, so much effort, so much money that we are maybe, you know, it's not happening yet, but maybe a little bit more and I will succeed, maybe a little bit more and I will make that sale. The persistence is important, but then when it goes on for too long, when one then is not abiding by the affordable loss principle, you know, that could really lead to trouble. A mentor can help the entrepreneur be a little bit more objective and reduce those sort of risks.
Okay. Are there any particular skills you see lacking in aspiring entrepreneurs today, and how can they develop them?
Okay, obviously this is from my perspective, right, as a creativity and entrepreneurial psychology researcher and scholar. First of all, I think that young people need to understand, aspiring entrepreneurs need to understand that creativity is a skill. Creative thinking is a skill. So it's not something that we are either born with or not. Okay, we all have the potential to be creative. But we need to train it, we need to develop it. And there are particular techniques and strategies that we teach, right, to enable individuals to be more creative at will and to be able to identify opportunities and to lead to innovation. So that's one. Another important skill, I think, is what we call cognitive versatility. Now, cognitive versatility, again, relates to the information processing that we all engage in as human beings. We process information by two modes or using two systems. One is system one, which is the rapid automatic system that leads to intuition and gut feelings. And system two is the slower, more deliberate, more logical, conscious, rational mode of processing. Now, education has traditionally focused a lot more on system two. We're taught to analyze information, we're taught to debate, you know, we're taught to engage in logical, mathematical calculations, whereas the intuitive side is very often neglected. Through my own research, I have found that actually intuition is very important in entrepreneurship, but it is only used properly and, you know, to some extent in more experienced entrepreneurs. And we are now working on actually developing a program to try to increase awareness of and use of intuition within the framework of a cognitive versatile strategy, which essentially means being able to use both intuition and analysis depending on the task at hand.
So when you talked about intuition for our listeners, you're talking about gut feeling.
Yes, the gut feeling, especially experienced entrepreneurs attribute many of their decisions to. They say, well, you know, I don't know why I decided to invest in that, but I just had the gut feeling that it was going to work. And you know what? I was right. It turned out to be true. So it's not just a guess. It's actually a pattern recognition that is based on a huge amount of non-conscious knowledge that then is associated with that feeling, with that effectively charged judgment. Okay. Younger, less experienced entrepreneurs don't have that because they have not accumulated all of the experience, the domain-specific experience, of course.
Yes.
Not just regular experience.
So just one example is like making an investment, mm-hmm. you know, in companies or in organizations and say,
precisely,
I'll invest in that company because my gut feeling, my intuition says that it is, you know, promising and it is going to do well.
Precisely.
Okay.
Whereas somebody without the intuition might either over rely on analysis. So they would, you know, spend ages looking at the data and, or they might just act on a whim, on a guess. But a guess is not the same as a gut feeling.
Okay. All right. So technology is rapidly reshaping entrepreneurship everywhere. How do you see it influencing the landscape in Malta?
Well, I suppose nowadays when one thinks of technology, one straight away thinks about AI, right? Mm-hmm. So AI can be seen as either an evil being, I suppose, nowadays people are considering it to be, or a tool. I try to teach my students that it is a tool that should be used cautiously and as a sort of assistant, as a co-pilot. So it's important that the student, or in this case, the entrepreneur, is still in the driver's seat. So I think, yes, definitely, you know, there's a major trend that AI is making it easier for entrepreneurs to build products, for example, test ideas, scale with fewer resources. But it also, I think, means that human creativity and judgment really should remain center stage.
You made reference to artificial intelligence, AI. Would you say that the younger generation are becoming more dependent on such a tool? I mentioned the younger generation, not because the older generation, but the older generation didn't have AI when they were younger. And so it's sort of not into that system yet. But the younger generation have grown into this. Would you say they're becoming much more dependent and relying more on the tool as opposed to being more creative in their own mind?
Well, here I have to answer from my experience as an educator, right, rather than with my experience with entrepreneurs. And the short answer to that is yes, we see a lot more use of AI among students. And our challenge, I suppose, as educators and as a university, is to strike the balance between appropriate and inappropriate use, ethical and unethical use. So, for example, I tell students that it's completely unacceptable to use Gen AI to generate your assignments, your answers. That needs to be your work. But then it's fine to use AI to help you tweak it, to help you polish it up, you know, to use to bounce ideas off. So if it's used as a tool, it's fine. If it's used, if there is an over-reliance on it, I think it's problematic because it is removing responsibility from the students, and they are also thinking for themselves less and less.
Yes. So it must go against now the fact that, you know, you teach creativity and entrepreneurial mindset when they have all these tools at their fingertips and they can actually make use of it in order to produce.
Well, yes, but I still think that human beings can come up with genuinely better, more creative ideas than AI.
Okay, future outlook, Leonie. So if you had to give one piece of advice to aspiring Maltese entrepreneurs today, What would it be?
That would be definitely start something now, start something today, don't wait for tomorrow. It might be something small, you know, it might be learning a new skill, it might be attending a networking event, meeting somebody new, it might be enrolling for a course because you feel that you don't know enough. But ultimately, start something now. Don't procrastinate. Entrepreneurship is not something that you wait to do sometime because it's a process, it's a journey, as I said before, and it takes time. Right? So it's never too soon, but it's never too late. An interesting area of study is senior entrepreneurship. And this is a growing trend that many older people in the 40s and 50s and even in their 60s are becoming entrepreneurs so late in their career. So rather than starting when they were in their teens or 20s or 30s, they left it very late. But still, you know, there is the start something now applies also to them.
Would you say it's because they maybe are more financially stable? That's why they
started later? There are a variety of reasons. There was a whole, my ex-student's whole PhD was written okay. about it. So maybe for another discussion.
Okay. I know you made reference to the importance, you know, of, you know, networking, you know, start, you know, if you have an idea, begin. Would you say that if my idea came along when I was still at university, would I still begin it? Or should I wait till I graduate before I actually go forward with it?
Well, it depends on your personal situation, right? It depends on many things. It's not a simple yes or no, black or white answer. It depends on what sort of capital investment is needed. It depends on how much time you have at hand. I mean, yes, I'm saying start something now, but if a student is writing a dissertation or sitting for finals, I would definitely advise the student to complete the studies, to focus on completing the studies. But they could still do something now in the sense of attending an event. That's still doing something now.
Okay. Looking forward, what would you say are the trends that you see shaping the future of entrepreneurship over the next maybe 5 to 10 years?
Again, I think, again, AI and technology. But perhaps a more positive twist would then be the sustainability angle. We're talking a lot nowadays about the circular economy and circular entrepreneurship, which is designing products and services to, rather than take resources, make them and throw them out, waste, actually designing them in a circular economy framework so that resources are returned to their source when the product is complete. And I think that is hopefully the future of sustainability and entrepreneurship. And really and truly, it's also the past. Because, you know, when we talk about this as a recent trend, it's what our forefathers used to do, you know? They used to repair, they used to reuse, they used to repurpose. But then somehow that went out of fashion for a number of years. But it seems to be coming back.
Okay. Well, that is all the time we have for today's program. I wish to thank our guest, Professor Leoni Baldacchino from the University of Malta, for taking time out to accept our invitation. I would also like to thank Mark Ajus for the technical assistance of this program. As we come to the end of this series, we've had the privilege of hearing from founders, CEOs, and academics who live and breathe entrepreneurship every day. Their stories remind us that building a business is rarely a straight line. It's a journey shaped by ideas, resilience, setbacks, and the courage to try again. Whether through innovative products, impactful services, or the mindset they cultivate in future entrepreneurs, each guest has shown that entrepreneurship is as much about people and purpose as it is about profit. We hope these conversations have inspired you to think differently, take initiative, and perhaps even begin or continue your own entrepreneurial journey. Stay with us for the next series of Business Frontiers in Malta. I am Anne-Marie Take from the University of Malta, and it's been a pleasure spending this time with you.